Welcome to State of the State, the monthly roundup of policy and research for the state of Michigan, brought to you by the Institute of Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University and our friends here at WKER Studios. I'm Arnold Weinfeld, Associate Director for the Institute. I'm joined, as always, by MSU economist Dr. Charlie Ballard and IPSR Director Dr. Mac Grossman. Gentlemen, we have a lot to discuss today in terms of politics and the economy. With less than 90 days to go before the election, the presumptive Democratic candidate for president, Joe Biden, has chosen his running mate, and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer was in the mix right to the end. Certainly, we're going to be a key state in determining who wins the election. And of course, the economy is going to play a large role, as it always does. So let's get a feel for what Michigan residents are thinking about our elected officials in the economy, with some results from our latest State of the State survey. For that, we turn to MSU economist, Dr. Charlie Ballard, who also serves as managing director of the survey. Charlie, what are the top lines from the latest survey?
Well, not surprisingly, there was a drop from the previous survey. We had one in February and then another one several months later. So we had a kind of a pre-COVID and post-COVID. And there was a notable drop in the fraction of people who said that they were better off than a year ago, well over 10 percentage points drop. And then there was about the same magnitude increase in those who said that they were worse off than a year ago. Although a lot of people said they were about the same, which I think fits with the reality, because a lot of people lost a job. But if you're able to work remotely, you probably have maintained your employment, and many folks are doing okay. In terms of the ratings of our elected officials, we always ask about the president and the governor. And President Trump's numbers did not move at all pre and post COVID. His favorable ratings, either a good or an excellent mark, are in the upper 30s. They did not budge, whereas Governor Whitmer's favorables increased by about 15 percentage points. She was in the 30s. She's now in the 50s. We also asked a question about how do you think President Trump has handled COVID and how do you think Governor Whitmer has handled COVID? The answers to those questions line up very, very strongly with the answers to the questions, the overall, how do you think that they're doing? So it appears that a lot of Michigan residents were impressed by the way in which Governor Whitmer has handled the COVID crisis.
Yeah, that's certainly quite a jump. And Trump's numbers have been in that upper 30s range for as long as he's been president. Is that right? They've really never wavered.
Yeah, we've found him to be pretty consistent, and a lot of other surveys have found rather consistent results. He actually drifted up early in some surveys, not in ours because we didn't take it as often. In some surveys, he drifted up early in the COVID crisis, as is very common for the American people to rally around a leader in a time of crisis. But then his handling of the crisis, once it became apparent that he was not taking some actions that a lot of people thought would have been appropriate, his numbers went back down. There is a very strong base of folks who are going to support Donald Trump no matter what.
No matter what, yeah. And then what about how Michigan residents are feeling about the economy related to that pre and post COVID, their current financial situation, whether they're feeling good about it, better or worse off?
Yeah, there was a big increase in the number who said they're worse off than a year ago, big decrease in the number that they said they were better off than a year ago. In some other questions, we asked more general questions about how people are feeling, and a lot of folks said that they are feeling anxiety, depression, fear.
All right, Matt, what about the political scene now? Democratic nominee Joe Biden has chosen his running mate. I think Senator Harris was pretty much a front runner for the entire time, although Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer was certainly in that mix. That's good for Michigan. Seems like she's going to be a major part of the Biden team. What's your take on Biden's pick and also the primaries that have just occurred across the country?
Well, Harris was the most likely pick from the beginning, but there was a few detours on the way to her nomination. The historical evidence suggests vice presidential nominees don't matter too much to election results. People's opinions on them tend not to be very influential in their vote. To the extent that they do have effects, they tend to fade away quite quickly. There are exceptions to that in that they can sometimes change people's views of the presidential nominee. So, for example, Sarah Palin's nomination made voters more concerned about John McCain's age. Joe Biden's nomination made voters less concerned about Barack Obama's inexperience. So they can have effects like that. It's possible that Harris will have the same, but we don't really see the typical vice presidential effects that people expect, like the candidate will bring on their state or region, or the candidate will bring on the social groups affiliated with them. For example, we did not see women more likely to vote or more likely to vote for their party's nominee with either Geraldine Ferraro or Sarah Palin. There are a few differences this time. African-American, of course, has never been nominated as a vice presidential nominee, so we don't know if there could be effects on turnout that are specific to that group. And it occurs in the time of a strange convention. And a convention, which is normally at the same time as the vice presidential nominee, typically reinforces partisan support. That is, you get a bump out of the convention, but it's mostly people who would have supported your candidate eventually. And Joe Biden really doesn't need that at the moment. He has overwhelming Democratic support already. So it's not clear if we'll get the same level of convention bounce that we usually do.
And then what about the primaries in general? There were some fairly watched primaries. Especially even here in Michigan, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, a member of the squad, was purported to have a pretty tight race and then won 2-1. And I think just the other day, Congresswoman Omar also won her race. And they may have gained another squad member out of Missouri, where a younger African-American female beat a long-term incumbent in a Democratic primary. Any thoughts on the primaries?
Yes. So 3 out of 4 squad members had primary challenges and they've all defeated them. There have been a few additional left victories in the primaries. We're still having some primary challenges on the Republican side as well. 7 is actually the most incumbents to lose at the nomination stage since 1974. And it's actually 4 Republicans and 3 Democrats who have lost so far. So we're still seeing more internal party challenges than we have in the past. There's also a trend this year of more minority women being nominated, the most ever. And on the Republican side, actually, the most ever women nominees. So there are some key trends in the primaries this year, but it's not clear how many of them will go on to matter in the general election and in Congress in the years to come.
And what about here in Michigan, where you have an important U.S. Senate race? Gary Peters and John James, Mr. James, tried to unseat Senator Stabenow just a few years ago. Anything out of the state of the state survey regarding that, or what are you seeing in terms of that? Are you expecting a tight race?
Well, we don't, Charlie may have the numbers in front of him. We don't have a very tight race as of May. We showed Gary Peters well ahead. Nationally, it is the Republicans' best pickup opportunity other than Alabama, which they're expected to win back. But it's still It hasn't looked very close in the polls so far. James did gain on Stabenow over the course of the campaign last time, so it's possible he will do that now. He has more money, which is rare. Democrats in other states have been ahead in the financial race. And he has some opportunity to run a somewhat different race. The Republican incumbents in other states are very tied to Trump. James has tied himself to Trump in terms of positions and defending him, but he has a different demeanor. And of course, he's African American, so he has some opportunity potentially to differentiate himself. He's actually running ads against Peters on Peters downplaying the COVID crisis, which people normally associate with Democratic ads run against Trump. So there are some differences. Peters is the least known incumbent running for re-election. He gets the most people saying they don't know or don't have an opinion of him compared to senators in other races. So they still have an opportunity to mold voters' views of Peters. But bottom line, if it's a Democratic trending year, you just don't expect a Republican to win Michigan.
And right now, you see it as a Democratic trending year as of this point.
Well, Biden's up 8 points nationally at this point and about the same in Michigan. So that is an unlikely circumstance. But, you know, we would have to see a whole lot of Biden-James voters for James to be able to overcome that.
That said, Michigan remains a key state, even though reports indicate that the president has pulled ads out of Michigan. You still see Michigan as a key state moving forward?
It's still considered a major swing state. Biden is still running ads here. They'll still be campaigning here. But we seem to be on the outs in terms of the top tier. It seems like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania are more likely to go to be competitive than Michigan at this point. All of that could change. We won't move out of, say, the top 8 or 10 states, but we may not be in that final 2 or 3 that get the most attention.
Any other states right now in terms of the presidential election that you see as key states that may not have been thought of key states in the past, states like Nevada and Arizona in particular?
Well, I'd make a distinction between states that could go either way and states that might actually be pivotal to the outcome. So there is a chance of Biden winning by a lot. And if Biden wins by a lot, there are a lot of states that could go Democratic. I mean, even, really out there states like Alaska or South Carolina have some potential for going Democratic in a Biden landslide. But of course, they would never matter to the outcome of the election. They're not going to be right on that pivot of the national popular vote or the Electoral College. So that's why, even though we look to these new states, we still look at which states are closest to being the pivotal point and are close to the national political picture. And it still looks like Trump has about a 2-point advantage in the Electoral College over the popular vote. In other words, he could lose by 2 points in the national popular vote and still win the pivotal states. And those really are still basically the same. Pennsylvania, Florida, Wisconsin, not a whole lot of change. Arizona is the one case where we could see something different if turnout is incredibly high. If turnout's incredibly high, then Democrats have a chance to win Arizona in a way that they might not, even if they might lose some of those other states. But it's pretty much the same picture that we had last time.
And that's an interesting point you make, that Trump can lose the popular vote by 2 points and still win the election, much like he did 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what happened 4 years ago.
Yeah. So, Charlie, back to the economy for a moment here. What else did we see from the State of the State survey in terms of Michigan residents' attitudes towards the economy, how they see themselves and the economy moving forward, and maybe some of your own thoughts as to what we're seeing across the country, this stop and start COVID situation?
Right. I've already mentioned that we ask a question in our survey every time about How are you relative to a year ago? And the people who thought they were better off than a year ago went down by double digits. And those who thought they were worse off than a year ago went up by double digits. We also asked, how do you think you're going to be a year from now? And those also deteriorated, but not as much. And that's a finding that we have found ever since the inception of the State of the State survey a quarter of a century ago, that people tend to have a little bit of latent optimism about the future, even if they feel like they have taken a hit. In terms of where the economy is going, you know, I'm not sure that economists are necessarily a very humble bunch, but I've got to express some humility. This forecasting the economy is difficult in normal times, and these most certainly are not normal times. And the other thing that I have to emphasize is normally in a lot of economic downturns, like the one of 12 years ago, all we had to worry about was forecasting economic policy and how businesses and individuals would respond to those economic policies. Now we've got to forecast that, but also we've got to say things about how COVID will go, because I can't emphasize it too much. We will not get the economy back on track until we get COVID under control. And right now, with in many parts of the country, infections and deaths on the rise in the last month or so, that doesn't look all that great for the economy in the next few months. Big Ten football is not going to happen. That there are an awful lot of people who sell T-shirts and hot dogs and who provide security at the football games, and the list goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Those are economic activities that are not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're going to likely to see continued downward pressure. We have seen in terms of overall employment, we've seen a rebound in May, June, and July from April, which was by many measures the worst month in the history of the U.S. economy. But we're still at unemployment levels that are higher than they ever got during the Great Recession. And so I think it's likely to continue to be a bumpy ride until next year. A lot of forecasts say that, assuming we had to get a vaccine sometime in 2021, that by 2022, we'll be able to say that the economy is kind of closer to normal. But for the next few months, I do not see a dramatic improvement, especially since the virus is continuing to rage in many parts of the country.
Let's talk about the next few months, though, because there's an issue before the Congress, before the president, about the economic stimulus checks, the unemployment enhancements.
The odd circumstance that we're in right now is that the Democrats are pretty much offering a package that would help Trump's reelection, and he's not taking it. They want to spend more money. They want to put a check of $1,200 with Trump's name on it in everyone's account to increase unemployment benefits right before the election, make sure that there's no state and local government layoffs right before the election. Those are all things that should benefit the economy, at least temporarily, and help Trump's reelection. But it's the Democrats that are proposing them, and the Republicans are so far not willing to go that high. So it's sort of a strange circumstance that proves that on occasion, the parties do stick with their preferred policy aims, even though they're kind of would have the opposite political effects that you might expect.
Any thoughts, Matt, on those executive orders, though, that the president has put forth? Of course, there's a lot of nuances to them, shall I say. States would have to chip in. I think it's $100 a month per person that would file for the enhancements. But there is a school of thought out there that says they'll be challenged. Are they actually workable?
They will be challenged and they aren't very workable. I don't think that they, some people immediately call them unconstitutional. I don't think that that's really the issue. I think the issue is more that they had to use these workarounds that aren't likely to be very effective. So for example, they had to use the disaster assistance, which they don't have enough money for, to do the unemployment, which they didn't meet the requirements for unemployment benefits under disaster assistance. So they have to not call them unemployment benefits and have this quarter match from the states in a time when they haven't given states any additional money. And states will be uncertain as to whether they should even go forward with this, given that the stimulus package is still under consideration. So I just don't think that many states will do it. And if the states do it, then they are only going to last for 30 or 40 days, not for the rest of the year. Similarly, with the payroll tax, he can only defer those payroll taxes rather than actually absolve them. And so businesses are very likely to continue taking them out of workers' paychecks because the taxes are eventually going to be owed. So we may see some effects, but these are just not very workable policies to be done by the executive. And it puts Michigan and other states in difficult circumstance. We don't know how much money is coming in from the federal government and what form that's going to take.
That was an interesting assessment. I had not heard. The Democrats in Congress were actually offering the president something of a gift, and he's not taking it. That's an interesting assessment.
Well, I mean, it's most obvious with the stimulus checks. I mean, if you say which party's going to benefit from people receiving $1,200 checks with Donald Trump's name on it right before the election in a time of economic downturn, I think it's pretty obvious that's more likely to help the party of the incumbent president. Mm-hmm. And they are okay with it, but they're not making the compromises to actually make it happen, at least so far. And in general, you know, more economic stimulus is going to be better for the immediate prospects of the kinds of economic variables that tend to help the incumbent president. So the parties are on kind of opposite policy sides of their political interests.
So Charlie, as an economist, have those, the $600 a week checks, have they helped? Have they hurt? What should we be doing next? Should the government, should there be additional federal government spending in this area?
I think there should be, although I hope that it's more targeted. The $1,200 stimulus checks, there's a lot of evidence that a lot of that did not have the usual effect that we hope for of a stimulative fiscal policy, because the idea is you give people money and then they'll spend it. But many of the avenues by which people would usually spend money are now cut off. People are not going to on vacation trips. They're not doing a whole lot of leisure activities. They're not going to hotels, restaurants, bars, casinos nearly as much as they used to. So a lot of that money got saved, and thus it didn't get re-injected back into the economy. I would contrast those stimulus checks very much with the, I would draw a strong distinction between those and the unemployment checks, because the stimulus checks went to a broad swath of people, regardless of whether they had suffered any downturn in their current economic life. Whereas the unemployment checks, we know it, to the extent that the unemployment system works, and it works halfway decent, that those are going to people who have recently lost a job. And that means that that's a household that has had a decrease in their income. Those are the ones who are most likely to be able to spend that money. They'll be able to make their rent. They'll be able to pay their car loan, et cetera. And so that is, I think there's a very strong argument in favor of continuing enhanced unemployment benefits. I'm not rigidly in favor of the $600 number. I mean, if the Congress can agree on a number less than 600, it's way better than zero. And so I'm hopeful that some sort of an arrangement can be reached, although that remains to be seen.
Is there a, how are they coming up with these numbers, Charlie? I mean, how did they come up with the 600? You know, is it just pulled out of thin air?
I think it was pretty close to pulled out of thin air.
It's $15 per hour for a 40-hour week.
Right. That's what it works out to.
So can we say that Republicans in Congress now believe in a living wage?
I don't think so. Not necessarily. It was much more likely that we would get a number like $600 or $500 or $400 rather than $532.14. And Matt is exactly right. It's equivalent to a $15 an hour wage for somebody who's working 40 hours a week, which is a normal work week. Now, the point has been made by mostly by Republicans that is sufficient, that some workers may be reluctant to go back to work because if you're making $15 an hour from unemployment and your employer is offering you 12, well, there's a reduced incentive there. However, I haven't seen any numbers indicating that the magnitude of that effect is very large. An awful lot of the people who are involved here, there's no job for them to go back to. Their employer is not asking them back because their employer is shut down. And there's also a group who are reluctant to go back to work, not because of financial, but because of health concerns.
A couple of reports I've seen have indicated that there has been very little impact on people searching for work because of the $600 a week.
But if you could satisfy both sides and continue the program at $400, or it really almost any number that's substantially greater than zero, I think that would have a beneficial effect on the economy. I think we're in a dangerous moment because a lot of the folks, if you're unemployed and if your labor income is the only or the major source of income for your household, and you're not able to pay your rent. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about a possible increase in evictions. Regardless of whether people are evicted, if they can't pay their rent, then the landlord faces a very difficult situation. No revenue coming in or reduced revenue, and yet the landlord still has to pay the mortgage on the building. Worst case scenario is you get a kind of a cascade of ripple effects where rent isn't paid, landlords default on the mortgages associated with their properties. That has ripple effects that work their way through the financial system. So far, we've managed to avoid a catastrophic meltdown in the financial system, although on the 16th of March, the evidence suggests that the financial markets were very close to systemic collapse. Let's hope that through some combination of fiscal and monetary policies, we will be able to avoid the kind of freezing up of the credit markets that happened in 2008 and 2009, because that, of course, contributed to what was the worst downturn since the Great Depression before COVID happened.
Unfortunately, the political forcing mechanisms aren't very good. We have basically not much that is guaranteed to happen before September 30th, when overall government funding runs out, which could force a compromise, but could also force a government shutdown. So it also could get worse rather than better in terms of the political situation. And by the time it gets resolved, a whole lot of states could have moved forward with their budgeting, and that may force some early local government layoffs if there's no guaranteed money coming.
Yeah, and I don't think that layoffs of teachers and police officers and firefighters it's not going to look good in terms of PR, and it's not going to be good for the economy either.
Well, it seems like we're going to have a lot to talk about, gentlemen, over the coming months leading up to the election, for sure. As always, Charlie and Matt, it's a pleasure to be with you and talk about these issues. That's about all the time we have on this edition of State of the State. My thanks again to Russ White and the staff at WKAR for their continued support of this program. And join us again next month on State of the State.